From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. For decades now, Grammy-winning singer and songwriter Melissa Etheridge has been burying her soul with songs that include I'm the Only One, Come to My Window, and I Want to Come Over. That's just to name a few. She'll be performing those songs next week during a performance in Boise at the Morrison Center, and we are lucky enough to get the chance to chat with Melissa today. Thank you so much for making time with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So, Melissa, I want to go back to when you were 8 years old, because this is when you started taking guitar lessons. And I'm curious because I have two children and I can't get them to do anything without complaining, let alone pick up an instrument. So was this something that you really wanted to do, or was it something, you know, your parents were like, this would be good for you? You know, what was that like?
No, actually, I had an older sister, about 4 years older than me, and my father brought a guitar home for her. And I was the one who I loved as a kid. I loved the radio. I loved the records that my parents had. You know, this is the end of the 60s, early 70s. And I, you know, just loved all that great music that was happening. And when I realized the guitar was for my sister, I mean, I pleaded and begged. And my father told me that the guitar teacher said that my fingers would bleed. I was too young. And I said, please, please, please. And I begged him until they finally let me. And yes, my fingers bled. I eventually got calluses and never stopped.
That is incredible. All right. So then what was your sister like when was she like, good, I'm glad she got the guitar, I didn't want to do this anyway?
She did not want, I don't ever remember her touching the guitar.
So when did you know that you wanted to be a full-time musician? Because I know you played in high school, you played in college, but I mean, was there a turning point or a time where you're like, you know, I really want to see if I can do this?
I searched my memory bank and I cannot find a time where I was not thinking about it. I grew up, like I said, with the radio. I grew up with the Ed Sullivan Show, with these talk shows that these great musicians would come on and play. Mm-hmm. And it was Beatlemania. It was all of this. And that just called to me. I mean, completely, even though it was, I mean, you know, grown-ups would go, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I go, I want to be a singer. And they go, what? You know, it didn't make sense to anybody. And then, you know, in high school, I was like, I want to be a rock and roll singer. And there wasn't any, you know, there was a handful of female rock and roll musicians maybe. And so it was really, really unusual. But for some reason, it was everything I ever wanted to do. I don't know how to do anything else. I'm so glad it worked out.
And, you know, I'm so curious because it's, you know, even in this day and age, I think if a child, you know, comes to their parents and is like, I want to be a rock and roll star, it's like, okay, good luck to you. You have our full support, but get, you know, get an education too. What was that like for your parents? But I mean, at the same time, here they saw you at 8 years old, you know, begging to play this guitar.
That was exactly what they did. They said, okay, take lessons. So I took lessons, you know, and did that. And then in about eighth, ninth grade, when my mother really realized I wasn't going to let up off this music stuff, she said, well, then you've got to get, you know, an education so that you can like be a music teacher. And I'm like, all right, you know, whatever. And so I started in ninth grade, I started taking theory and, you know, music composition. And I started taking like college courses in it, and it was incredibly boring, but you know, it made my mom happy. And
there you go.
I even took voice lessons, which I think I took about four or five voice lessons from this, opera singer. And she said about the fifth one, she said, you know what, you go home and tell your mom to save her money. You're going to sing like you sing, and it's just fine.
I love that. I love that. So really, it was in 1988, you released your first album. This leads to an appearance at the Grammys. You know, what was that like for you? Because it wasn't like all of a sudden it's 1988 and you just, you know, get lucky and release an album. You'd been performing for quite some time.
Yeah. I remember when they were talking about overnight sensation and I went, oh my goodness, mm-hmm. really? Well, I came to Los Angeles in 1982, you know, looking, you know, for fame and fortune and a record deal. And I found out really quickly that you don't make any money playing. I mean, I had played before that. I had played in bands. I had played solo in, you know, hotel lounges. And I had always supported myself being able to play, you know, cover music, playing other people's music. But I was able to make a living. And when I got to California, there were so many musicians trying to make it. Everybody played for free or you paid to play. So it just took a long time. And I ended up playing in women's bars around L.A. That was the only place mm-hmm. that I could get like steady work and get paid for it. And it really helped because I became, you know, a very interesting performer playing in those places. And so then finally, when my first record came out, I had been in L.A. for, you know, 6 years. I had been, you know, every record company had heard me and turned me down and just all kinds of stuff. And so this overnight sensation, you know, it took a long time to get there.
Yeah, it took a couple of years, right? You know, one of the things that I've always really loved about you and loved about your music is your voice. It's deep. It's, you know, it's kind of got this smokiness to it. And I think for me, I mean, growing up, I've always, you know, I've always had a very deep voice and I can't sing a lick, but I can talk a lot. And I think that, you know, growing up when you have something different, I mean, I would get made fun of all the time for having this deep voice and sounding, you know, quote, like a boy. And to have someone like you come on, you know, to have such a platform and to be so well known for this deep voice. I mean, what was that like for you though? Because with the uniqueness of your voice, I think it also kept you from getting those record deals for so long.
Yeah. Yeah. It was unique. It wasn't like anything else. And it's hard for, you know, record company executives to go, you know, if it's the first time they've ever heard or seen anything like this, for them to, you know, jump at it, if it's not like something they have already heard and know. So, yeah, it was different. And it took a very special gentleman, Mr. Chris Blackwell, to hear me, see me, and instantly go, oh. And if you ask him, he'll go, well, I don't know why nobody signed you before. You know, he totally got it. But he was visionary. He's the man who brought Bob Marley to the world. He, you know, U2, he was always ahead in the music industry. And he just, in 1988, he felt like the future of rock and roll had a female face. That's what he said to me. And so he really believed in it. It really took someone like that to take a chance on me.
Well, and really then, you know, let's fast forward to 1993 when you release your fourth album, Yes, I Am. And this just, I mean, I think honestly, just, it was like you became a household name at that point. But at the same time, this also coincided when you made a big decision, in particular, when we think back to the 90s, when you came out as a lesbian. Why was that important for you to do, in particular, at that time, where we were living in? And frankly, it could have ruined careers, and it did, when there were musicians and actors who came out.
Yeah, it took a few years for me to really come to that conclusion, because in 88, I was just like, well, it's nobody's business, you know, and I'm just going to make my music. So I put one album, two album and out. And then, you know, I was kind of in the rock radio world and, you know, had been on the Grammys and, you know, for rock and roll. And I was not a household name yet, but, you know, musically people knew who I was. And then they started, by the time I put my third album out, Never Enough, I started getting deeper questions about my music because people realized that the songs were very, you know, confessional, very personal, mm-hmm. very heartbreak, and they kept wanting to know. And at the same time, I was also involved with the gay community deeply politically. This was the height of AIDS, and
right.
and we were dealing with another Republican administration that wouldn't talk about AIDS, wouldn't give any. I mean, you know, and our people were dying, and so it really unified the community. And I, you know, met these people who were on the front lines, you know, every day doing everything they could. These smart people, these, you know, lawyers and people in the music business, just, you know, behind the scenes, these people who were starting to stand up, and I was very inspired by them, and I really felt like, okay, I need to do so. I need to come out because it. I didn't want someone to start. Well, someone actually did. They misquoted me in an interview I did, and it said I was talking about my boyfriend. And I went, oh, this is horrible. People are going to think I'm, you know, people that do know I'm gay are going to think I'm, you know, hiding it. And right. so I thought I'm gonna come out on Arsenio Hall because he was a big guy back then, mm-hmm. and he would let me talk on. He would actually talk to me. The others, they just had me sing. So, but before then, I helped. I worked with some gay organizations that helped get Clinton Gore elected. And at the inaugural party we had, I told everybody I was a big gaby. Yeah.
And here we are, all these years later.
And yeah. here we are.
Well, and the fact that, you know, I mean, so here we are in this day and age now, where once again there is, I think there are many times where I feel like we've come very far within our society, yet at the same time, here we are with things that I thought that we had moved forward from. And the fact that things like gay marriage, same-sex marriage, are being questioned again, right? They're being they're being looked at as should we not make the, you know, take this right away from people? What is that like for you to be sitting here, you know, 30, 40 years later, being like, really, we're back here again?
You know, I've lived long enough now to see how society just it kind of comes in waves. It goes up and it goes down, and it goes up and it goes down. It swings this way and it swings that way. And you know, I saw us, you know, get our marriage rights and you know, and move forward, and it's, I'm not surprised that there was that kind of backlash. And because there's things that people are afraid of. And when people are afraid and they're afraid for their children and they don't understand, they just don't understand. They don't think they know anybody who's gay, or they do and they don't like them or something. And, you know, it's a very, you know, I've just seen it. And I do not believe that we're going to lose any of those rights. I do not believe that there's any way we can really go that far back. I do believe that we can swing back, and we can feel that sort of pressure from those who are afraid and who do not understand, because that's kind of just the way of human nature.
Yeah. For those of you just joining us, let me reintroduce our guest. We're talking with Grammy Award-winning singer and songwriter Melissa Etheridge. She'll be coming to Boise on September 28th. She's currently on tour for the One Way Out album, and that's why she'll be at the Morrison Center. But I want to talk a little bit about what you did during the COVID-19 pandemic. Here's so many of us, you know, we're in lockdown, we're all at home, and you decide to create your own concert platform called Etheridge Television, Etheridge TV. Tell us about this and how that all happened. I mean, were you just going stir crazy like we all were?
Oh yeah. At first I went on Facebook, you know, and that first week when California locked down, I was like, oh, this will be a couple weeks, and you know, we'll be so. So I told him, right. I said, I'm just going to do this every day till this is over, you know. And so I went for 58 days in a row.
Oh my
and,
gosh!
Yeah, and then unfortunately my son passed away, so I stopped everything and really looked and took a look around. And this was like in May and early June and of 2020. And I said, okay, I think this isn't going to go away soon. I want to do something because, you know, I want to do something with my sorrow and, you know, the feeling that I had. And I knew I needed to do something with my hands, do something. And it was also, I could see that my normal stream of income was going to be limited. And so I figured I didn't want to give it away for free anymore.
Right.
And so I met with my manager, Deb Klein, and I said, look, what I see is I can 5 days a week, I can give entertainment, you know, concerts, you know, at least an hour, a show 5 days a week. And I built in my garage, I built a streaming studio. So I got my, I really healed going back there. I cleaned it out and hooked it up, and I learned everything about cameras and lights and sound and streaming and, oh my God, all the technical internet stuff that I actually know now. And so I spent the time really learning something new, and man, I'm so grateful. I learned so much. I was able to, make quite an income. My manager and I both really cracked the code of how to do the streaming. And we still have, you can still subscribe to Etheridge TV, etheridgetv.com. You can look at all the, it's almost 2 years worth of, you know, content we have on there from the shows and things that we made. And it's just, you know, we still do some streaming from the road every now and then too.
Mm. What's life like now? I mean, you have been through so many ups and downs in your lifetime. I mean, just when we look at your career itself, but you know, your breast cancer diagnosis and what you went through with that, as you mentioned, I mean, losing a child. What's life like now?
What's life like now? Well, I'm back on the road, which makes me very happy. I'm making new music. I'm very close with, you know, my family. I have three beautiful children that I love very much and that I'm very proud of, and my gorgeous wife, and we just really find a great comfort in each other. And we just move ahead. We know that Beckett is out of pain now. Mm-hmm. He's in a much, much better place, and for that, we're happy for him, and we miss him, but, you know, he's still in our hearts, and so we just do what we do day to day.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time to talk with us. It has been such a pleasure to chat with you.
Well, thank you very much. I look forward to getting back to Boise and playing some rock and roll music.
Oh my gosh, well, we look forward to it as well. We have been talking with the iconic rock legend, Melissa Etheridge. She is coming to Boise on Sunday, September 18th to play at the Morrison Center. Thank you again so much for taking time today.
Thank you. I look forward to it. Bye-bye.
Bye. You've been listening to Idaho Matters from Boise State Public Radio. I'm Gemma Gaudette.